Karsh.
Having a blast. Having a great time. You're wrong about the fries, but having fun nonetheless.
I'm wrong about the fries.
You're wrong about the fries.
Today's National French Friday. Hey,
today's National French Friday. You blew it. You went with the five guys. Cost five mortgages. You went with the five guys. Not the best fry in the world. And any fry that needs condiments is not the ultimate fry.
Well, I think the condiments make it better. That's all. I mean, sure, it's great to dig into a bag of McDonald's fries and just eat them right out of the bag. And who doesn't do that? Everybody does that. But boy, I'd rather be able to sit down with a McDonald's fry and dip it in ketchup or mustard.
Yeah,
that's me.
My wife doesn't like condiments. She likes the fry on its own.
Well,
yeah.
Good for her.
Yeah.
Everyone's got the opinion on the fries. And you didn't even go with a fry. You went with a tater tot, for crying out loud. So I don't know what you're talking about, which is not a French fry. Today's National French Friday. It's not National Tater Tot Day. Did I miss that, Bobby? Today was National French Friday, and this guy's talking tater tot.
I think he missed something else.
No, I understood the condiment thing.
This is not fried potato. It's fries.
Yeah, I'm letting it.
Okay.
Go. Yeah.
Let it go.
Yeah, you're married at this point. Nah. You probably don't have to worry about things like that anymore. That's good for you. 248-539-9797 is the telephone number. Get some more calls here. Matt is next up here, 97.1. Hey, Matt.
Hey, what's up, guys? Real quick, Gator, because I know you said you love tater tots. So I'm out here in Boston. There's this bar. They have, like, these jumbo, oversized tater tots, and they stuff them with cream cheese and bacon. Dude, they're so good.
Matt, where is that? I will be there in 2 hours, Matt.
That sounds pretty good.
For me, the order of GMs from most hot seat to least, I'm going to say Iserman is one because it's been so long since they've made the playoffs. Myself and other fans are just irritated with the way things are going. Two and three are interchangeable for me. It's between Harris and Holmes. They swap back and forth. You know, the Tigers, they're right there. You know, we're playing better, so I do feel there might be a chance. We go to the playoffs. Now, how deep that run is, I don't know. Depends on what Harris does at the deadline. And Holmes, you know, he refuses to get another edge rusher opposite Aiden because if we face injuries again, we'll need someone. And Langdon, I put at the bottom only because he's the newest, you know, the newest GM in this town. And, yes, it's frustrating he didn't make a few moves. Honestly, I don't think Giannis – is coming here. I don't.
Well, he's not.
Think it's ever gonna. Yeah, that's done.
Do you mean LeBron or because Giannis has been traded to Miami.
Kawhi Leonard isn't coming here. Jaylen Brown isn't coming here. All those guys aren't coming.
I know people are saying, "Oh, we should get Giannis." Like that's not realistic.
Well, it
and
wasn't.
LeBron. It would be nice, but it's. I don't think it's realistic. But yeah, so for me, Langdon is on the bottom because he's just the newest. He did make really good moves and brought this team from 14 to 60. You know, they're in the playoffs 2 years in a row. Hopefully it'll be 3 years this time. So that's where I'm at with the GMs. Iserman is number one on the hot seat.
Okay, well, it wasn't about the hot seat, but I appreciate it. I think you completely misinterpreted
who's got there. the most difficult task ahead.
What's left for him. And I think they're pretty evenly spread out. Brad Holmes might be.
They're all screwed.
Yeah. They're not screwed. I mean, it's work. Every GM in every sport has work to do. And in this case, I think they're all pretty close gathered together here. I think there might be a gap between, Brad Holmes and the rest of the guys.
Well, wait a minute, though. The Lions, they're secondary the last 10 years. They've been ranked 25th out of 32 teams
in
pass defense.
If you look at their secondary in the entire history of the organization, it's been an
abomination. But again, look at the starters this year. DJ Reed, underwhelming last year. He's the best one.
Right, but
who's your second corner?
But that's the issue you have to fix.
Chuck Clark is your starting safety. Christian Eisen, starting safety.
Again, that's the area you have to fix.
Right.
It's not easy to do, but at least it's...
But they've never fixed it. Ever.
Right. But again, it's not like you're having to fix multiple positions. You've already fixed the offensive line. Your running back situation looks great. Your receivers look great. Your quarterback is solid, more than solid. Your linebackers look really good. Your defensive line is, we'll see if the changes you made or the additions that you've made are going to pay off. It's down to one position group. With the other teams, it feels like the players are so integral. You're talking about when we talk about Scoobal, with baseball or Larkin with hockey? Does Larkin kick off a bigger sell-off that includes Alex DeBrinkert and a total rehaul of this organization that fans are not going to put up with if Steve Yzerman is in charge of it?
I got a name for you with the Pistons. You ready?
Sure.
DeMar DeRozan. You've already added shooting. You don't need three-point shooting. He's there, averaged 18 points a game last year. If we're going to do the short-term thing, better to go that route than Kevin Durant.
Well, what is your – because you're adamantly opposed to Kevin Durant. Why is that?
Well, quite simply, he's going to be 38 years old. My personal promise is you're not going to win the East with him. So what are you really doing other than wasting 2 years of Cade Cunningham's prime? The last four teams that have acquired Kevin Durant all fell in well short of expectation. Well short of expectation. And quite simply, the name no longer matches the game, especially when you consider that the player accepts no accountability whatsoever. And again, like I've got friends in Houston. I worked in Houston. I said, what's the deal there? You're one of the biggest favorites of any playoff series. They were the largest favorite to win their playoff series out of any team that wasn't a one seed. And the Lakers, with LeBron James and the Island of Misfit Toys, no Luka Doncic, no Austin Reeves, beat them. How does that happen? What I was told is the frustrations toward Kevin Durant are boiling over, right? He couldn't get along with the Splash Brothers in Golden State. Didn't get it done in Brooklyn, Phoenix, Houston. What are we doing? If this city goes after Kevin Durant, they're just desperate for any star to call Detroit home. It's not the right fit.
I don't know if he's the right fit or not. What I do know is he scores. And he would unquestionably be the number two to Cade Cunningham, which is what they need, a number two. Is he the right fit to be that number two? That's debatable for sure. But 26 points a game last year, this is a guy who has professed his interest in Cade Cunningham and has talked about him glowingly as a player in the league. And I don't think it's any secret he'd like to play with Cade Cunningham, which might make things different in terms of a chemistry thing. If he likes the guy who's leading this team, that Durant doesn't have to be the leader on the team, that he just needs to be the number two guy, and maybe he's better suited for that. I don't know if it's the right move or not, because I have no idea what it would cost you to get Kevin Durant. I don't know what how many first-round picks, because that's really what they'd be offering. And, you know, Ron
Here's
Holland
my hunch.
In the mix.
Robinson, Duncan Robinson, Ron Holland, 3 first-round picks. That's my hunch.
It might be maybe 3 first-round picks is too much. I don't know. I'd absolutely consider it, though. I think there's something there with Kevin Durant. It just, I don't know if chemistry-wise it works or not. You'd have to do some deep diving in there. But the guy can flat-out shoot. He's still an above 40% three-point shooter. It's remarkable. In the last 4 years, his three-point shooting percentage has always been above 40%. His career, he's 39%. He still knocks down all his free throws. He was an 87% free throw shooter last year, 88% in his career. Still scoring 26 points a game, 27 points a game in his career. He does all those things. But if there's too much, I don't know if there's baggage or not with him. It's just,
he's got more baggage than the biggest prima donna you've ever seen, than the biggest high maintenance.
It's clear that you're not a fan.
But on to your point, what I could say is, does he make you better? Yes. But what's the end game? Do you grow with him over a period of time? No, he's going to be 38 years old. Does he make you better immediately? Yes, but I'm looking for guys that can grow with the team over the long haul here.
Well, he's not a guy that's going to grow with you over the long haul. He's a short-term solution to a problem that they have where they don't have a number two scorer. And the problem is the assets you give to acquire him, those assets could be future guys that will help you down the future. So that's for a short-term thing, for a one-year or two-year deal, does that work? I don't know if it works. You know, I haven't given a ton of thought to Kevin Durant, but looking at the team as they sit right now, assuming they re-sign Jalen Duren, I think the team's better. The conference is tougher. If you add Kevin Durant to the mix, does that put the Pistons on par with the other teams now in the upper echelon of the Eastern Conference? And you could argue, yes, it does.
What is your window with Kevin Durant? 1 year or two?
Maybe two.
Okay, maybe two. I just feel very convicted that they wouldn't get beyond the Eastern Conference final. I feel very convicted about that. If you feel otherwise, it might be worth the go. Well, but if you don't get past the Eastern Conference final, is it worth it to bring in a guy who nukes every locker room he's a part of?
I don't know if he does or doesn't. I think you'd have to do the deeper dive into talking to players that played with him before and find out what the honest opinion is there and talk with GMs and whatever. Talk with people you know that were in those organizations. The concern I have with Kevin Durant is his age and his durability. Throughout his career, he's missed large swaths of games in various seasons. Now, last year he was pretty healthy, played 78 games, which in a day and age of load management, that's not really utilizing load management when you're playing 78 out of 82.
Load management's a load of bull. He did play. He was available. How they could not beat the Lakers. I mean, does that not confound you?
Well, he's
that's
not
absurd.
He's not the only guy in his team.
No, I understand.
So
but
is the Pistons team better than Houston? Yes. So you're coming to a better team. Does he play better on a better team?
Or does the roster
the
on
other
Houston
guys aren't going to go down?
The roster on Houston with the better of the two Thompson twins, Alperen Şengün and Kevin Durant, that should have been a team that walked, that dog walked the Lakers.
Either those first two guys you mentioned, are they anywhere near as good as Cade Cunningham?
Of course not.
No. So then you'd fully understand that. You don't like Kevin Durant. That's fair.
But I do. They do have a player on that team I would like. I would like Şengün. You want to talk trade for him? There's your second scoring option.
248-539-9797 is the telephone number. Same number to Texas if you'd like to go that route as well. We continue here on the Carson Anderson Show on 97.1. 248-539-9797 is the telephone number. Same number to text if you want to get in that way. We've got lots of people who want to talk about the GM question we have out there, which is, you know, which GM's got the toughest job locally here for our teams? Left to go. Is it Brad Holmes? Is it Steve Yzerman? Is it Scott Harris? Is it Trajan Langdon? They all have their challenges ahead of them. And Brad Holmes, his challenge is to fix one position group, but it's a big challenge because it means so much in the
NFL.
And they've
never done it.
They have a pass defense, and they've got some real issues in that secondary with the starting safeties, both being out with injuries, and we don't know what Kirby Joseph's status is ever going to be. Because they don't know, they won't know until they actually get him in games. And hey, can you tolerate the pain or not? Brian Branch is not likely to come back anytime soon because he's healing up from the Achilles injury. They just waived Terry on Arnold because of the off-field stuff. You know, you're counting on DJ Reed, who had a little bit of a disappointing season, and then other safeties that just, you know, they're not going to move the needle in terms of being excited about. But everything else on the team, position-wise, seems like they've got it under control. But secondary, not so much.
I think you are on point when you say Scott Harris for this big reason. I think no matter what he gets for Scooble, the reality of what's out there for him is not at all what fans have in mind, is what they're going to get for him. So I think that's the biggest reason why Scooble is still here. Scott Harris is looking at the offers and he's saying, I'd get killed if I traded Scooble for that.
Scott Harris is still here. Or I'm sorry, Tarek Skubal is still here because Tarek Skubal is still proving himself to be healthy. I think from the injury, from the surgery, and the team was like, oh, hold on. We're going to back off here. He's going under the knife, not even halfway through the season. Are we sure that I even care about this pitcher? Maybe make sure that he's okay. And then, sure enough, he seems fine, knock on wood. But it's been, what, four starts?
Right.
Since he's come back, he's going to have. If I'm a team that wants Tarek Skubal, like if I'm the Dodgers, I've got this massive lead in the division. I'm in no hurry to get him. In fact, I may not even want him, right? Because you don't have to. But let's say that you're interested in him because you want to go over the top and you plan on signing him in the offseason anyway. Let's just get this ball rolling and let's go now and get him acclimated to his team in the second half of the season. You can afford to wait to the last day. It doesn't matter. You know, you've got the ultimate package of players that it's going to entice the Tigers. And, you know, if the Tigers open up the store for teams to come in and start bidding on him, well, of course they're going to be part of it. But we don't know if the Tigers are. Because if you're Scott Harris, you're kind of damned if you do and damned if you don't.
Exactly.
And though I would support him in trading him and saying, Scott, you're fine. Let me tell you something. You're okay. If you trade the best pitcher in baseball. I know it sounds stupid to think that you still have a chance, but I think you still have a chance. Okay, you're going to get players in return for him, and not only that, you've got other other prospects to move along to improve the team right now. Okay, if you're willing to go for it a little bit, you know, give up a couple of your top 10 prospects in organization, we can really improve the bullpen and perhaps add a bat to the lineup too.
What team is trading for Tarek Skubal? Because if you're going to get the haul that you want for him, it's got to be a team that thinks they're going to be keeping him long term. The concern is...
Not necessarily.
Well, I don't think you get the King's Ransom unless it's a team that thinks they can keep him long term.
I don't think there's a King's Ransom to be had for any player that's going to be a rental. I don't think that's the case. We learned that with Justin Verlander. There's not a King's Ransom for that. King's Ransom comes when teams have multiple years of control, which is why the Larkin situation should get more of a King's Ransom for the Red Wings than what Skubal gets for the Tigers. Skubal gets you prospects.
Fair, but the bigger concern, though, is the loose bodies in his arm. One loose body in his arm is indicative of wear and tear on the elbow, which
do you
is
think
just,
teams are worried about that?
I think it would take an idiotic general manager to give him the 10-year, $400 million deal he's looking for.
Well, there are only a couple teams in baseball that can afford to pay him in the offseason, and the Tigers aren't one of them. The Dodgers are absolutely a team. They don't care. They've got this TV deal that's been grandfathered in. They make more money.
That should never be, by the way.
It should never have been, but it is what it is, and that's why they're able to spend way more than everybody else. We know that the Yankees can be involved in the offseason and spend as much as any other team. The Cubs can spend a ton of money if they want. Philadelphia likes to spend money. You know, there are teams that are willing to do it. So I don't care about the offseason. I care about right now. The teams that would be willing to take him as a rental, do you add Milwaukee to the mix?
Yes.
I think absolutely you add Milwaukee to the mix for a team that would be interested in adding Skubal.
Because they have the prospect haul that you're looking for.
They do. The Atlanta Braves might not have the prospect haul, but they can try to make something happen. I mean, there are teams that would be willing to make you an offer for sure. But if the Tigers are playing winning baseball and look like it, like I think they will be above 500 or at 500 or above 500 by the time the trade deadline comes around, I'm not convinced Scott Harris is going to trade Tarek Skubal, and I think they're going to ride it out because that's what they're going to say. Hey, we're going for it. We're going for it by hanging on to our number one pitcher. And that'll rally some of the fans. I don't know if it rallies most of the fans, but it's going to rally some of the fans. I'm going to go, yeah, I mean, as a fan, it's fine. I'd like to have him back on the team and making a run for it with him. But then the offseason comes and you realize all I'm getting is compensatory pick for maybe the best pitcher in baseball. And that's underwhelming when you look at what could have been.
Right. But if they end up doing that, and fans are panicking that, oh my God, we're going to get nothing for him, et cetera, et cetera. What that signals to me is that there wasn't an offer out there that they said to themselves, okay, compensatory pick, plus we have him for the run. Which do we value more, this or this offer out there?
If the offer isn't there, then the offer is not there.
Correct.
You don't trade him just to trade him.
Exactly.
I mean, you have to trade him for something that would be better. That's the baseline. Better than a compensatory pick. So that's what they have to look at. What does that mean? It probably means at least you start with a top 50 prospect in baseball and then some. So that to me would be better than a compensatory pick. And if it's not there, then it's not there. 248-539-9797. Joe is in Wyandotte. Welcome to 97.1. Hey, Joe.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, man.
I just want to say, I do think the Tigers have a good chance of making the playoffs. You know, baseball is a crazy sport, and they're getting hot right now. But with that in mind, I'm still open to trading Skubal. I think we can, rework the lineup really well if we get something back for him, and I think we can make a decent run.
I agree. I mean, I've been preaching this for about a month now, that you can do both. You can buy and sell. I think Skubal gives you an excellent opportunity to land a couple of prospects, whether they're double-A guys or triple-A guys, or one of each. You know, I think you can land yourself a couple of pretty good prospects. And at the same time, you've got a great rotation that keeps you in every game. And yes, you want to add to that. You want to add bullpen arms. Well, you've got prospects to finally deal to get bullpen arms.
But maybe the bullpen arm can be part of that deal.
It could be.
Maybe you get a top 50 prospect and a halfway decent bullpen arm.
It's on the roster right now. I mean, yeah, you can. I mean, other teams will have, you know, expiring contracts that may want to dump out or whatever. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot you can do with it. I agree with you, Joe. I think this team should look at both.
Yeah, I don't know, guys. I think I see it with this team. I think they got a good chance. But Gator, before I let you go, I want to get your McGregor Holloway prediction.
I would say I'd go with Holloway. I think it's tough to be away from the world of MMA for as long as Conor McGregor has and expect him to be what he was. He's had so many, you know, distractions, if you will. He's lived quite the life since his last fight. I wouldn't bet on him. I think that once you get, I mean, he's older now. Was he 39 now?
37?
37, whatever he's in his late 30s. You know, I don't watch MMA as much as I used to, but when I watched it, I loved all the big names, and those names would hit a certain age, and they just weren't the same fighters. And once you get knocked down, now you're susceptible to getting knocked out a lot. And it happens with all of them, all the best of them.
I mean,
Anderson Silva at the end of his career. Yeah. You know, you watch Chael Sonnen at the end of his career, Dan Henderson,
Roy Jones,
Chuck Liddell. I mean, all these MMA fighters just, you know, they needed to call it a career at some point. And for Conor McGregor, he's been out for a while.
Thanks, guys. Y'all are the best.
All right. Thank you, Joe. 248-539-9797. Some more text coming in. Eisenman's problems are 100% self-inflicted. We've given him 7 years to simply build a playoff team. I'm not disagreeing with that. We've talked about Eisenman a lot. Would not have been surprised if they decided to fire him. They didn't do it. I'm not wringing my hands and saying, oh, they should have done it, but I'm getting close to that point.
Well, I was there a year ago, and that combined with no press conference letting us know where the bar is, no press conference letting us know what the expectation is, how much longer this mediocrity is going to be allowed to continue, that's what's pushed fans point to the point of indifference. Indifference is far worse than hate or anger, right? You have to care to be angry. We're teetering on the point of total indifference right now.
I think he's got an opportunity with the Larkin situation to really turn things around. I don't know if he's going to find the right move to make that happen. I think Larkin's going to have to open up his list of teams, his precious list of three that's now four, to be realistic about it. If you really want out of town, then you got to open up that list and let Steve cook a little bit. And no guarantee that he's going to come up with the right recipe. There's just not, because he hasn't shown that track record in making the acquisitions with this team that shows that he's done right. I'll give him the opportunity, but I think this is it. You know, this is this time next year, if this is not a playoff team, I think we're looking at a different general manager. 248-539-9797. This is 97.1. 8-539-9797. The telephone number, same number to text. We've got lots of text coming in. Regarding a question about the GMs in town, who's got the toughest job as a GM right now? And, you know, laying it out there, you look at Brad Holmes. Maybe the biggest thing he's got to deal with is fixing a secondary that seems non-existent right now. Steve Eisenman's got the Larkin situation of potentially DeBrinket as well in a total rebuild, and, you know, good luck with that. Scott Harris, he's got the Scooble situation. Not only that, but every list of baseball right now is saying, hey, look for these potential trade targets. They include guys like Casey Mize, and I don't think we want to see Casey Mize get traded. You got Gleyber Torres and, you know, fans wanting prospects to play. And then the Pistons, Trajan Langdon, the fans want to add a number two player. We keep waiting for a number two score, and they haven't acquired that player. Maybe they drafted that player, but that's more of a long play than it is a short play, even though Corey looked really good last night in his summer league debut. But can't stress enough the three words, summer league debut. It's summer league.
Look good, though.
That's fine.
Driving the basketball.
But Doug's got his resolution is to not fall for summer league play, summer league hype. He always falls in for the summer league hype. But that being said, Okori shot 50% last night, had 20 points. If you saw any of the game or the highlights, he knocked down three-pointers. I think he was 2-for-5 from three-point land. He was driving to the rack, which is what everybody said about him. This guy is, he lives in the paint and he survives in the paint. And he was doing that last night.
Was doing it inside, outside. Here's how I look at Summer League, right? Success in the Summer League doesn't guarantee success in the NBA season, but lack of production in the Summer League almost certainly guarantees you're going to be a nothing burger.
I think that's a great way to put it. And when it comes to Okorie, I'm curious to see, you know, how good he does look in the Summer League moving forward. And then we're going to get to the beginning of the season. And then it's going to be, is he going to have a bigger impact on this team than Ron Holland? And where is, I mean, will Ron Holland be even on the roster when we get to the start of the season? Because you would imagine if there's any trade that happens, that he's going to be a piece that gets moved in the trade, because that's what they have left to move of value and substance, even though it's not like he's off to a rocket start to his career. But defensively, he's very, very good, and he was a lottery pick.
If Ron Holland had just been VJ Edgecombe, Stephon Castle, who went one pick ahead of him, Harper, Pistons fans wouldn't be saying they need anything. They'd be saying, look, we've got Stephon Castle. He's right here. He's going to develop into that next 20-point-per-game guy. But those guys all average 16 points a game or more. Ron Holland is at 8 points a game and looks a lot more like Asar Thompson than he does a guy who you can rely on to put the ball in the basket.
Something else I think is a story that is just kind of marinating here. We haven't really discussed on the show, but it's also something we're not going to know until the playoffs next year. But it's about JB Bickerstaff and what he does in the playoffs with the roster that he has, because he used it differently from the regular season to the postseason. Ron Holland played every game. He played a million games over the first 2 years in his career. And it was a DNP a number of times in the playoffs. You saw that Beef Stew's minutes were down significantly. Now, maybe that was because of injury. I'm sure that plays a role in it. But there was just a disparity with the way that the bench was used, comparing that to how they were used in the regular season. Took a while to trust in Paul Reed.
Well, that's my thing. It's, why did it seem like it took an anvil dropped on his head to realize that Paul Reed was the guy? Paul Reed was the answer that, hey, man, check this out. Every time he enters the game, good things happen for the team. Plus, so, minus through the roof.
I imagine Paul Reed's number, his minutes are going to increase now that Isaiah Stewart's not part of this team, even though they've got John Collins. I think there's a lot of interesting parts on this team moving forward. But it's just something to keep an eye on. Like, JB Bickerstaff shouldn't go unscathed in this, and I don't think he has gone completely unscathed with the failures in the playoffs, but it seems like Jalen Duren's the scapegoat, and I'm not sure that's entirely fair, but we'll see on that. I'll set the Red Wings aside because they're a whole different type of mess. That being said, Scott Harris, AJ Hinch have the best chance to pull the Tigers out of its tailspin, while Brad Holmes, Dan Campbell are in the toughest spot because the expectations are really high. The team lacks defensive backs, has a subpar defensive line outside of Hutchinson because they refuse to get help on the opposite side of him, and the offensive line is arguably a weak spot on a team that has a scheme that relies on it to be a strong point with a statue at quarterback, that's Dan Redford. I agree with like half of what he said and completely disagree with the other half of what he said. They do not have a subpar defensive line. Now, if you want to say that outside of Aiden Hutchinson, but you can't do that. He's part of the defensive line. Aiden Hutchinson's a huge part.
Desperately need Alim McNeil to return to form.
Yeah, Alim McNeil, now that he'll be even healthier, which is the big thing. He came back last year from the injury and clearly didn't look the same. Is he going to look much like he was before the injury? I would bet on that, because having another year to get healthy with that. I'm curious to see how Derek Moore plays as a pass rusher on this team. Lord knows I'm not a Michigan football fan, but I was impressed with Derek Moore. He gets after the quarterback. Tyleek Williams is going to have to take a big step forward. I mean, he was a first-round pick. Let's see. The other part I would disagree is the offensive line part being a weak spot on the team. I don't think it's a weak spot on the team. I think that actually they got stronger by putting Penei Sewell to the left side. You had an aging and injured Taylor Decker last year on the left side.
Mays in the center is the key there.
Mays is
what does he give you?
Hopefully he's way better than what they had, which I expect that he would be.
Mahogany's health.
Mahogany and Ratledge at guards, young in their careers, basically rookies starting last year. They make a big leap from year one to year two. Most rookies do. I expect that.
Which of the two units has more question marks to you?
Between the offensive and defensive line? Defensive line, to me.
I think offensive line. You got players changing positions. You've got health questions. You've got free agency questions.
The ability, one player changing a position.
Right.
And he's played the position with the Lions. Mm-hmm. So and everybody says he should be playing left tackle anyway. But he wasn't because Taylor Decker was there. That's why he started his career as a right tackle.
But synchronicity is so important on the offensive line as well. And that combined with new faces, right? You could have some question marks there. Aleem McNeil, I'm confident he's going to come back. Tyleek Williams, I think, is going to be ready to take a step forward. I've only got one question mark on the defensive line, and it's the same question we always have. Who is the edge opposite Aiden Hutchinson? If they can consistently find that player that can give them 8-sack production on the other side, you've got your answer.
Yeah. And by the way, Hutch having another year to be healthy, coming back from his injury, I expect he's going to take another step forward. I think... Again, I don't like Michigan, but their players, you got to. I respect the hell out of Aiden Hutchinson as a player. I think he's outstanding. Let's go to Dave in Rochester Hills. Dave, welcome to 97.1.
Thanks for taking the call. I'm going to go back to the topic about Tarek Skubal. I just had one observation to make, which is that, first of all, I do think that the Tigers need to trade him because otherwise they're just going to put themselves behind the eight ball. But I wanted to say that Scott Harris should be careful not to trade him to another American League team.
Well, let me ask you, why would they be behind the eight ball if they don't trade him? Wouldn't it be the exact opposite because you're hanging on to the best pitcher in baseball? Or do you not think they're a playoff team?
Well, he's the best pitcher in baseball. That's debatable too. But anyway, let's say he is. First of all, he's only 1 out of 5 starts, okay? And they've shown in the last month or so that they have actually at least 3, maybe 4 starting pitchers who are going to probably win you a game. So he's not as valuable to the Tigers as would appear on the surface. And, you know, if they let him, if they keep him, okay, so, you know, that's an extra game or a few games they might win, but they might win them anyway. And then when the season's over, they lose them for a bag of peanuts.
Yeah, but if you keep them, look, I advocate for trading. I'm just looking at the other side of this. If you keep them and you make the playoffs, that's where the value is. Because in those first two series when they're, you know, best of five, you need to have the upper hand in pitching. And having a rotation that is Troy Melton, Casey Mize, and Tarek Skubal, and some combination, Valdez and Montero and whatever else you want to throw them in, Jack Flaherty. I mean, they've got a wealth of stud pitching to throw at you in the postseason when you need it most.
That's true. But on the other hand, I think, you know, we've seen that Tarek Skubal is not a lock. He's not a lock pitcher in the playoffs.
He's not.
Well, what is he? He hasn't won a game, I think, in the last couple of playoffs.
He pitched beautifully against Seattle, but Dave, to your point, the issue and the reason why he's defined his own ceiling, right? He's limited his ceiling is that he only goes 6 innings. He doesn't have the stamina, apparently, to do what the old school pitchers did.
Well, would I rather a guy go 7 or 8 innings and give up 3 runs, or a guy go 6 innings and give up 1?
Fair, but would you not agree that he would enhance his value if at least he had the capacity to go longer?
Sure, but I don't look because of what happened last year when he took himself out of the game after 6, and everybody makes such a big deal out of it. He was outstanding. He's been outstanding in the playoffs and screen 6 career games in the playoffs. His earned run average is 2.04. In 39 and two-thirds innings in the playoffs, he's given up just 23 hits, and he struck out 56. His whip in the playoffs is 0.73.
Hey, you just whipped that caller. I mean, big time.
I mean, I'm sorry. He's a great playoff performer. I'm sorry that he didn't go seven innings last year. Sorry that didn't happen. But if you forget about what happened in the seventh inning of that game, you know what the Tigers had? They had like eight innings to score a run after that, and they didn't get it done. They went well into the
extra innings. Think it's important to have a guy who can at least in critical moments go seven or eight innings. I mean, I you don't think that's important?
I think it'd be great to have a guy that you could say can go eight innings, and I think it all depends on pitch count. That's what baseball is these days.
The reason
somebody's able to go eight innings is because they've got an efficient game going. You could be dominant as hell like Tarek Skubal, okay? If you're going through six innings and now you've thrown 99 pitches through six innings and you're spent, why come out in the seventh inning? And who knows what happened there last year, what the conversation was between A.J. Hinch and Tarek Skubal, what the real conversation was. But people make so much out of that game and forget that he was great in that game.
What I said was, you're not done if you're throwing 101. And his last pitch was 101. And I think his pitch count was 91. So, again, it wasn't a fatigue issue. Emotionally, did he give everything that he had? Okay, but again, if all you can give is six innings, you have defined what your ceiling is, right?
But it's not about, again, it's about pitches. It's not about innings. There's a difference there. It's how efficient are you? And with Tarek Skubal, he's not terribly efficient because he strikes so many batters out. So his pitch count is always going to be up. And does that still have value? Of course he still has value. Would it be nice if he can go eight innings once in a while? Sure. We'll keep an eye on that and see if he ever does this again. I'll be happy to be in a position the Tigers were last year to win a series on the road with your ace on the mound. I'll be thrilled if that's the case.
People remember the Grand Slam against Cleveland. You're right to bring up those statistics of the total playoff stats because our memories sometimes are charred, skewed by one negative event.
248-539-9797. This is 97.1. Had the Tigers traded Skubal earlier, and if Mason Miller becomes available, you would be able to make the trade to get him and still not drain your prospect pool because of the guys they received in the Skubal trade and their existing prospects. You stocked your farm system ahead of time, Adam and Royal Oak. I guess. And look, I was a proponent of trading him in the offseason. I mean, no bones about that. I would have traded them in the offseason. I was surprised that they held on to him. But here he is, and they're hanging on to him again. Are they going to hang on to him all the way through the trade deadline and all the way through the end of the season? Nobody knows. You can speculate all you want, but nobody knows.
I don't see the Padres as a buyer for Tarek Skubal at 46-47. Now that record in the AL would put them in contention for doing something.
But that's not what he was. I think if I'm not mistaken here, what he's saying is had you traded Skubal earlier, you could have gotten prospects for him. And then, if Mason Miller becomes available, you could trade the prospects you got for Skubal. It's like a trans.
You have the prospects to get Mason Miller.
Yeah.
You do.
But they do have the prospects to get Mason Miller.
Correct.
And hang on to Skubal or still trade Skubal. I mean, you can. If Mason Miller becomes available, it's painful. I mean, do you want to give up Max Clark? Because I think that's what they'd ask for.
Is that the prospect you feel like Scott Harris values most?
I do. And I think that way because there might be sentimental value with that as well. He was his first draft pick. Look, Max is young. He just turned 21. He's at AAA. I think they fully expect him to be part of this team starting next season. Maybe even later this year he might get a promotion, depending how things go. He's got a very bright future. I think he probably is their number one guy. I value someone maybe a little. There's a couple guys I really value in their system. I love Bryce Rainer. I absolutely love Bryce Rainer. And he had a game the other night, I mentioned to you, yesterday. It was 5 for 5 in a game with two doubles, two singles, a home run, a stolen base.
I mean, his arrow's pointed almost straight up.
I won't be surprised if we hear in the next couple of weeks he's been promoted to Double A Erie and how quickly he could be on the rise for this team. I mean, he's shortstop. Pretty sure-handed shortstop. He's got great size, a beautiful sweet swing from the left side of the plate. There's a lot to like with him. I really like one of their younger prospects they have who's, you know, still hasn't made it to single A ball, but Chris Rodriguez, who's like a 17, 18 year old prospect who is an outfielder.
Haven't even touched on Anderson, Briseño, or Lorenzo yet.
Right. I like Briseño probably more than the other two, but you know, there's a lot to like there. But the point is they've got some players in the system that other teams are going to covet. But I think Max Clark is probably the number one. And you ask who I think they value most, probably Max Clark. He's the closest to getting here and, you know, was that first round pick that they had. God, the Mason Miller thing is just so intriguing. Like if you add Mason Miller to this team and you give up nothing from your major league roster to get him because you're just giving up a prospect or two to get him.
That makes you a contender. Really good.
Yeah, it does. It does. All of a sudden, all these games that you lost late because your bullpen was a mess and you couldn't have anybody to close things out and hang on to that lead, it changes. And with the possibility now that maybe they've really found something using Cater Montero for multiple innings late in games, and then you could turn it, like if he pitches the seventh and the eighth inning, then you turn it over to a closer in the ninth, that it feels like it's locked down. That's intriguing. And yet they still need a right-handed bat, or at least when I say right-handed bat, it's a bat that hits left-handed pitching. I don't care if it's a lefty or righty. I really don't. I just want a bat that can do it consistently against left-handed pitching.
Well, you saw, I got tired of seeing the statistic. It was a week or two ago. I wish I could remember the exact day, but the Tigers have lost the same number of games already this year, 8, that they fell in the entirety of last year in games they led after 7 innings. They've blown 8 games this year. I mean, we've talked about all the problems with the teams. If you just held on to leads after 8 innings, you'd already be in the playoffs right now. Who helps you hold on to leads after 8 innings? It's always fun when you have that trade idea that's like your own, right? Like I thought the Pistons had a chance to move Isaiah Stewart in a deal for Derek White on Boston. I didn't realize Jaylen Brown was the guy they wanted to get rid of. So that was my idea. Didn't happen. Your idea, Gator, I think could happen. I mean, it's there.
Pieces have to fall into place.
Yeah.
The Tigers have to still be trending in the right direction, and San Diego has to be trending in the wrong direction in order for that to happen. And even then, there's no guarantee that the Padres would say, yeah, we're going to move Mason Miller. I mean, if you're the Padres, you've got 3 years of control under him after this year. You don't have to move him at all. You can wait till next year if you want to try to do that. And just chalk this year up to bad luck, or you, hey, we just need to add a couple more players in the offseason and we'll go. I mean, our big bats haven't provided big at bats. Tatis is not off to the year we thought he was going to be off to, you know, and see if you just kind of regroup. But we'll see what the Padres end up doing. But when I saw that name being mentioned as a potential trade target, and nobody is talking, it's funny because nobody's talking about the Tigers buying. All the national writers, it's all either about Skubal and selling or looking at Casey Mize.
It's kind of
and
insulting,
selling.
Isn't it?
It's not insulting. I think it's short-sighted. It's like, have you taken a step back and looked and seen what this team is, what they were in April, what they were in June, and what they are in July? Have you taken a step back and look at that, or are you just focused on looking at a number in the standings and that's it? Like, you don't look at the context of what happened, which was a god-awful May. That's what it was. The above 500 April and best record in the American League by winning percentage over the last 5 weeks, covering June 1st to the current date. 248-539-9797 is the telephone number. You've got a road rage story that we got to get to because I'm really curious about this. It comes up next here, 97.1.